complicity is also a part of belonging to groups and societies whose aims we affirm and whose paying members we are. When these groups act against the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount, that is, against the teachings of Jesus. In addition, it becomes our burden when we cause others to do wrong, even if it is simply by being a poor example, by talking about how something should be done but not actualizing it ourselves. During a lifetime on earth, much can be cleared up in a short time, through recognition, remorse and changing one's ways. A soul needs eons to do this. That is hell. When repentance takes place in the soul realms, the too late aspect is a particularly bitter pill, because the soul sees what it could have so easily accomplished at the right time in its human garment, but which now, without a body, is no longer possible. Those who are still incarnated or have reincarnated take no notice of the discarnate soul, of its pleas. Such a lost opportunity can no longer be made up, the damage done cannot be so easily rectified. Other souls with which the soul should clear something up may not be present, being instead in human garments or on higher purification planes which are not accessible to this soul. It can even be that those souls with which a karma has to be worked out may not be at all interested in clearing up this particular burden, because other planetary radiations are presently stimulating other shadows in them and so this burden is not active in them at this time. Furthermore, the possibility of making amends, which could have easily been done during its life on Earth, is no longer there. The pain over what the person caused or neglected to do is truly a hellfire in the inner being of the soul. Every word that may have been carelessly spoken causes pain. Now it is too late to undo it. Every word, every thought has to be accounted for. Souls, which as human beings acted under the influence of outside forces which were activated by way of gene manipulation, are not conscious at first of their wrongdoing. One cannot rule out the possibility that most of these souls at first rebel against the expiation of such burdens. It will be very hard for the soul to accept its responsibility for a wrong attitude which it may have taken on unconsciously but with which it has nevertheless burdened itself and that it will have to work off and suffer through this burden. This rebellion could even hinder its clearing up this burden for a very long time. From this, a rebellion could rise in the purification planes against those whom the souls blame for their burdens. It is clear that the others are not guilty, because the person who attracts outside negative gene fragments must have set up the magnetism for this, himself. Therefore he carries the greater part of the responsibility for the penetration and absorption of the foreign genes as well as for the consequences of this. Next headline is, Incarnation, a Chance. The chance of a life on Earth is the opportunity it gives to clear things up. Many wish for a long life on Earth, presumably because they do not know that life continues after the physical body has been laid to rest. They are unknowing. But even the knowing person can rightfully fear death, particularly if he did not listen to his conscience, did not actualize and clear things up. He knows that his soul will have to expiate in the purification planes, that is, that it will have to suffer. Expiation is also possible while living in a human garment. Every illness is an effect, whose cause we created in the past, possibly even during other lives on Earth, and we should accept the illness as such. The soul may even have deliberately planned such a blow of fate before incarnating in order to make use of this chance. If we recognize the purpose of our illness, as well as of suffering, need, blows of fate and other apparent evils, if we recognize the burden, the wrongdoing in us that lies behind these difficulties, if we clear up what we have caused, then what has befallen us, our expiation, becomes a relief for our soul. Through our suffering and pain, the shadows and the burden in our soul dissolve. When we recognize the reason for our suffering and pain and clear up its cause, then the guilt is paid off. When we do not recognize ourselves in our illness, in our need, that is, when we perhaps accuse our neighbor or our fate, or even God and blame them, then we only increase our soul burden and our suffering for nothing. This also applies to severe illnesses, including the worst ones like cancer and AIDS. When we prevent an illness, Without clearing up its spiritual causes, we are forcing the karmic cause back into our soul. This will then take form in another illness in this or in another life and break out again, perhaps even more severely, if we do not clear it up beforehand. It follows that the use of any means to prevent an illness without working off the spiritual cause at the same time is unlawful and, in the final analysis, damaging to the soul. This is true of the extreme measures used in traditional medicine, as well as of so-called spirit healings, of organ transplants, of the use of intensive care equipment and of genetic engineering. In each case, it is the development of the soul by freeing it from its burdens that is important. The soul should not be hindered from achieving this. If the soul does not clear up its burdens, then this karma flows out through illness, need, and blows of fate during one or several lives on earth. In the soul realms, the soul experiences its own unkindness towards its neighbor in images and will suffer through this until it has attained forgiveness. A shorter life can be a blessing for the soul. If a person, for instance, lives an active and conscious life through his 35th year, he has few deep-rooted programs. Then, in the following years of his life, he can continue to change many a thing, that is, to clear them up. As he grows older, this becomes more difficult, and at a very ripe age it is hardly possible. A long life is not always necessarily advantageous, particularly when the moments are not used for the growth of the soul, but for following deep-rooted habits. Knowing about these and other correlations of the law of cause and effect can help us to understand the purpose of our life on earth and to fulfill it. Then after its physical death, our soul can continue to live on in the lighter worlds of the beyond. Next headline is, genetic interference in the physical inheritance of man. We read almost daily about genetic engineering in the technical media. There is a steady growth in the availability of technical literature and scientific films on this subject. At the same time, people are accepting genetic engineering more and more. According to the polls of 1992, 74% of the Germans support genetic engineering. Society of German Engineers newsletter, June 26, 1992. More and more diseases are being treated by genetic therapy, and the USA is a forerunner in this technology. Thus, we can say that in human medicine the barriers against genetic engineering are coming down faster and faster. The same newsletter reported that the approval for changing human genetic makeup in the therapy of genetic diseases is surprisingly high. 52% of the Germans polled are in favor of it, despite ethical reservations by experts. Apparently, ethical reservations do not count for much when a specific use lies on the other side of the scale. This applies particularly to large pharmaceutical corporations. For them, there is a real drawback in not being given free rein in the industrial countries. Therefore, they go to third world countries where they can carry out all these experiments without the legal restrictions their native European countries have imposed. This is openly admitted. There are specific indications that genetic engineering has taken the lead in drug production. The giants of the traditional chemical and pharmaceutical industry, such as Glaxo, Schering, Bayer, Pfizer, Roche, Sandoz and Seeberg AG, have invested heavily, to the tune of several hundred million dollars, in the American biotech dream machine. In 1992, more than $4 billion worth of medications and vaccinations produced by genetic engineering were sold worldwide. In the face of this development, we have to raise the question about what benefits mankind has received from medicine and pharmacology. Let us look at the results of transplant techniques. How many survivors are there who have had an organ transplant, and in what psychological frame of mind are they? Many died soon after because rejections have not yet been overcome. As a result, animals are being specifically bred for the purpose of producing organs which can be transplanted into human beings. The pig is apparently an ideal organ donor. It is in many ways similar to a human. That is, in the composition of the structure of the organs and in the immune system. This is why the pig is accepted by the medical profession as an organ donor. But since the organs from pigs are still being rejected, human genes are being transplanted into the pig's embryo, so that hardly any reaction can come up since the immune system of the pig and a human being are so similar. Xenotransplantation, the transplanting of animal organs into humans, will certainly be a pillar of the future in modern medicine. The basis for this is the alignment of the antigens of animal organs with that of humans via the insertion of human genes into animals. And so, the patient himself can decide, does he want to become an animal or remain a human being? In mythology, we often see mixed beings of animal and human nature, like the so-called chimeras. Has medical progress brought us to such a disparagement of nature? Next headline is, clones are identical copies. There is a spiritual principle underlying everything that happens. For example, every thought is energy and carries within itself the impetus to be actualized in the deed, to manifest itself. Therefore, we should not be surprised that whatever man dreams up will one day materialize. The clone seems to be such a phenomenon for many. For instance, in veterinary medicine, numerous experiments are now being carried out with animal embryos. Embryos are, for example, 4 or 8-celled microorganisms A, and the geneticists manipulate these microorganisms. It is possible to pick apart the embryos and thus produce genetically alike copies, so-called clones. 2-celled embryos of different animal species can also be mixed, resulting in a mixed being. The mixed breed of goat and sheep called geep already exists. This is especially noteworthy, because it means that the technical prerequisites developed in veterinary medicine can, in the final analysis, also be applied to human beings. Professor Hennig Beyer, chair of anatomy and reproductive biology at the University of Aachen, has said the following: take a book on veterinary medicine and simply substitute the word animal for human. What happens the daily is no longer utopia, but rather everyday business. Cloning are the manufacture of genetically identical life forms A reproduces living beings with certain desired traits, and as many as are wanted. Nature normally does not make copies this way, but it is something that can be deliberately carried out by man. Cloning is, so to speak, identical twins times 100, times 1,000, etc. Seen spiritually, there is an important difference between identical twins which came about naturally, and cloned living beings. Twins, as well as all other natural multiple births, each have their own soul, each are their own person with different programs. Nor are their bodies identical. The soul forms its earthly body according to its own specific structure, its consciousness. Stated simply, souls are one of a kind. They cannot be duplicated, they cannot be reproduced. Each soul and each human being with a soul is a child of God with a unique mentality, with unique traits, abilities and talents. By cloning we can only reproduce the human body. A body without a soul is dead. But if a body is alive, if it speaks and moves, an energy bearer, a life force, must be in that body. Since the soul exists only as one and the body two or even more times, what is in the other bodies? Who or what uses this empty body as its house? Who or what looks at us from the eyes of a cloned human body? It cannot be a soul with a high degree of purification, for such a one no longer strives for self-realization on earth, and would in any case not play along, since it respects the divine laws. Who or what else could it be? Could it perhaps be a burdened soul, a base soul with little of its own life force? Could it perhaps be a demon, who takes this opportune chance? Or is it a part of a demonic energy field which is investing here? But one thing is clear, cloning, of animals or humans, is not in accordance with the laws of God, nor to all standards of ethics and morals. Whoever promotes, or even carries out such experiments should be asked what forces are influencing him. After all that has been stated here, he should not hesitate to reflect deeply on these things, for we attract that negativity which still lies within us and has not yet been cleared up. Some readers may think this is all some kind of fantasy. Perhaps they are wrong, as the following information substantiates. During a work protection and safety expo which took place in the 1/4 Seldorf in 1991, the following was reported: there is a brisk international black market in genetically engineered material. Genetic engineering is every man's technique. It is taught in the research labs as hands-on learning, without having fully mastered a good microbiological practice. Dr. Clone's home cloning kit, a genetic construction kit for everyone, has been available in stores for some time. Years ago, such a kit was already being offered to schools for experimentation. It is not only doctors, but theologians, lawyers, biologists, sociologists and psychologists, too, who state that experiments with human embryos cannot be allowed on ethical grounds. But who guarantees that these experiments will not be carried out? It would, for instance, be no problem at all to set up a genetic lab in the garage or cellar for an outlay of just a few dollars, and with little knowledge of biology and chemistry. There are many things that happen in this world that were not decided by a scientific committee, but were nevertheless carried out as a result of science. For example, the newspaper The Hamburger Abendblatt reported in March 1992, Indians murdered by traders in human organs. Massacre at the University of Barranquilla, Dateline, Bogota. The fate of several native Indians murdered at the University of Barranquilla, a town of 2 million inhabitants, has alarmed the public in Colombia and has thrown light on the conditions of squalor under which Indians live who subsist at the edge of society. First reports indicate that a number of men and women were outright slaughtered for purposes of medical studies, and that university employees plied in a brisk trade of human bodies and organs. It is suspected that the number of Indians who have been murdered at the university is much higher because there are many cases of missing Indians. One assaulted Indian, who managed to get away just in time, gave the following eyewitness account. In the room he saw numerous containers with already prepared pieces of liver, intestines and other entrails. The knife was lying there ready, and he assumed that his corpse, too, would have been cut to pieces. According to the police, two bodies were discovered whose skulls had been broken into and the brains torn out. All of the dead had their fingertips cut off to prevent identification. Next headline is, Keep Silent. The Catholic and Protestant churches claim to be God's administrators on earth. So what do these institutions or their high-level representatives have to say about the fact that genetic engineering and genetic manipulation violate the ethics of the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount, that is, the teachings of Jesus of Nazareth? Through careful examination, it can be seen that the attitude of the Catholic institution is a conflicting one. Superficially, they argue against experimentation with human germ cells. In principle, however, the institution is not against research and not against genetic engineering. It is a well-known fact that the Catholic Church has taken their enormous wealth and heavily invested in large corporations, many of which carry out genetic experiments. Could it be possible that a seemingly moralistic stance is superficially taken by the Christian world, although behind this is an enormous economic vested interest, since the Catholic institution does not interfere in what these industries do? The Christian point of view of Western statesmen and politicians, who call themselves Christian, does not go so far as to manifest itself in decisions and actions, for instance, in laws. Genetic engineering is not only tolerated, it is promoted for the most part. In all its variations, many words about the morals and ethics of genetic engineering are bandied about which, in the final analysis, don't amount to much. Politicians and Christian institutions are simply not taking a clear stand, they are neither hot nor cold. Let's examine this further. The churches, represented by their dignitaries, call themselves Christian. They claim to follow Christ and to represent Him and God Father on earth. Every one of us knows who Jesus of Nazareth was. It would take very little to imagine how he would have thought, lived and acted, so that we could answer the following questions. Would Jesus of Nazareth, the incarnated Christ, have agreed with gene manipulation? Would he himself have carried out any manipulation, any cloning, yes, even let one foreign gene enter a single tomato? Would he have prevented people from recognizing their sins and atoning for them? he would never have agreed to these practices. He not only taught the divine laws but also lived them. Only those who follow his example are Christians. If we apply this criteria to the church institutions, we notice that something is not right. But can a person be called Christian who does not follow Jesus of Nazareth and his teachings, acting differently or even contrary to them? The same holds true for politicians who swear by the Bible or designate their parties as Christian, as in Europe, for instance. Many people who cannot simply be disregarded as evil approve of genetic engineering. Many of them simply do not know about spiritual matters. If people could gauge what they do or affirm, perhaps some, or even many, would think and act differently. But for the most part they cannot grasp it, because they do not know the basic spiritual laws, for example, the law of cause and effect, or they do not take these spiritual principles seriously, because those who represent this teaching are not good examples. Over the many centuries, few have set an example for us by living according to higher and truly Christian moral and ethical values. Many do not know that life goes on forever, that we have a spiritual heritage which we should strive to return to. Many do not know that everything that is negative falls back on the originator. And why don't they know? Can it be that it has not been taught by those who took it upon themselves to bring the teachings of the Nazarene to mankind? Can this be why the ship world is such a sorry wreck, which the pirates, the demons, now want to rearm, and ply the seas with troops of robotic human dummies without a will of their own? More than ever a decision is needed, for or against a Christian life, for or against the Catholic or Protestant Church, because when we call ourselves Christians and remain silent, we burden ourselves. And what do the state representatives have to say? Back in 1992, former Vice President Dan Quayle arranged the easing of regulations governing genetic engineering. He said that one could now assume that genetic products were harmless and thus safety standards could be reduced. Soon after, the same was done in Germany. The trend of governments moves in the direction of making gene engineering seem harmless, of playing down possible dangers, in fact, of denying them. The churches remain silent, despite the words of Jesus of Nazareth, "What you do unto the least of my creatures you have also done to me." Why are they silent? The view of ecclesiastical authorities is that genetic engineering could be useful to humanity. They believe that material life has the highest value and must be maintained at any cost, even prolonged. This is not surprising since to a great extent they know very little about the soul, having experienced the reality of their own soul very little. And so, the well-being of the soul, which can be served only through the actualization of the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount, does not take precedence. And wherever external well-being takes precedence, the prolongation of life is valued most highly, and the end turns out justifying the means. The ecclesiastical representatives are not alone in having this point of view and in setting these goals. The demons also want it that way. What can be done? In order to remove the negativity from this world, we have to start with ourselves. The only person whom I can change, and am allowed to change, is myself. Let us look at ourselves. Have we become fully matured citizens with all rights and responsibilities who seek security and orientation where it can be found, in the teachings of Christ, in equality, freedom, unity, brotherliness and justice? Do we recognize the blind leaders of the blind? Do we speak up when we see injustice? Or do we remain silent? Must not every person who wants to live as a Christian ask, and answer, in each situation, what is the will of God? This depends upon whom we say yes to. Either we tag along with those who serve the demons, and then we're tied to them through the law of cause and effect and share the guilt as well as the consequences. Or we walk towards equality, freedom, unity, brotherliness and justice with Christ and all those who daily conquer themselves, and with them, into a new and light-filled era. Next headline is, Reflections upon the goals and background of the Human Genome Project. If we delve more deeply into the phenomena of genetic engineering and molecular genetics, We gain the impression that we are not really dealing with the realization of ideas of individual scientists, which are expanding and gaining acceptance more and more, but with something that seems to have a master plan behind it. The activities of leading governments and their silence bring us to this conclusion. One needs to read between the lines. Let's have a look at what some leading genetic engineers and molecular geneticists have said. The internationally known Professor James D. Watson, who, together with Crick, discovered the structure of DNA, said the following about the goals of the Human Genome Project, as in 1961, when President John F. Kennedy decided on the moon landing program, the USA has initiated an important goal of great public interest. The price of obtaining the sequencing, that is, the decoding, of about 3 billion base pairs which form the human DNA is smaller than the expenditure for getting a man on the moon, but the effects of the Human Genome Project on the life of man will be many times greater. Mankind has never yet had the chance to open up a more important source of information. The decoding of the genetic message in the DNA molecule will supply definitive information on the basic chemical structure of human life. All of the many individual genes need to be decoded so that we can learn about their function and method of activity, and then, by means of genetic engineering, they can be specifically targeted and inserted into those areas where one wants to bring about certain changes. Briefly summarizing, the following can be said about the background of this gigantic project. This project aims to patent genes that will be marketed by capitalistic companies which will hold a monopoly. According to the following quote, "This was a foreseeable inevitability almost 10 years ago. Already this scientific revolution has become a multi-million dollar business with transnational chemical, energy, agribusiness and pharmaceutical corporations virtually annexing US universities with massive research grants." And Jeremy Rifkin, head of the Washington-based Economic Trends Foundation and a major critic of biotechnology, can see the formation of an unprecedented combination of economic and political power, a multifaceted, multinational, life sciences conglomerate, a huge company that will use genes just like earlier corporate powers used land, minerals or oil. So how does it look today? In the medical science section of the New York Times on July 25, 1995, the following was stated in the subtitle, "The field is driven by non-medical concerns, critics say," and continued in the article, "The venture capitalists who have set up small companies that are a driving force behind this new field are presumably shrewd judges of the risks they are taking." Yet a number of leading scientists, including the director of the National Institutes of Health, say they worry that the field is rushing too fast from the laboratory to the bedside, driven in part by scientists' desire to climb aboard the bandwagon and in part by commercial interests that have little to do with medicine. Scientists said there were immense pressures to rush forward with gene therapy studies in universities, said Dr. James Wilson, director of the Institute for Human Gene Therapy at the University of Pennsylvania. "Scientists crave the prestige of being the first in your university to do gene therapy." And, he said, "Universities want to announce that they are part of the gene therapy wave. But the biggest force behind the gene therapy wave, some say, has been biotechnology companies. 62% of the gene therapy studies that have begun are financed by industry. From everything we have said up to now, one could conclude that those who are behind these companies do not just want to insert genes into people in order to bring about a certain change in metabolism which could possibly be helpful and useful. Perhaps much more to the point, foreign genes should be inserted whose goal is the old parts of the brain, that is, the limbic system. What consequences could this have for us? The limbic system is the control center for the communication of thoughts and emotions. This communication, as per our theory, should be blocked for the purpose of a long-term break-off of contact to our feelings and sensations. But the feelings are the bridge to the divine in us. Once a person has become emotionless, he will be capable of many things. However, he will no longer be able to feel remorse for his actions. Such a person can no longer find the way to his inner being, and so his future development, within the framework of the mission of redemption of Jesus Christ, is made impossible with effects reaching far beyond his present life on earth. We are not the only ones who have discovered that more and more people can hardly get in touch with their world of emotions. And this means that remorse, forgiving and asking for forgiveness becomes ever more difficult. One thing is certain,